Welcome to the Dream Huge Podcast, where we'll talk with real estate investors, entrepreneurs, business leaders, athletes, and more to inspire you with their success stories so you can work hard, never give up, and dream huge. And now, let's start the show.
Yo, what is up, everybody? Welcome to the Dream Huge Podcast, hosted by JP for three, John Pavlansky. How you doing, JP?
I am doing excellent, Pete. I'm very excited to talk with our guest today, man. Ready to get into it.
Yeah, this is going to be a good one today, folks. You never know who's going to be on the Dream Huge Podcast. We have guests from all over the world, folks, so thank you for tuning in. Mark Gray, how you doing, Mark?
Good, Pete. Here, ready to learn.
Good, man. Mark has just got the blank slate in the background. He is focused in. He's got the headphones on. He's ready to roll. I love it. And we have our special guest today, Antonio Garrido, all the way from France right now, currently. He jumps around a bit, and he'll tell us a little bit about that. But a little bit about Antonio real quick. He transforms leaders into world-class performers using pioneering leadership success models for sustainable growth. Creating the world's best leaders one day at a time. He is an executive coach, a speaker, and a three-time author, and most recently, the author of My Daily Leadership. So thank you for joining us, Antonio. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what it is that you do.
Well, thank you for that. What a great intro. That's probably one of the best intros I've heard. I'm kind of feeling now that I'm probably going to disappoint you all enormously. So first of all, everyone, we just go ahead and lower those expectations. That'll probably be the best start for us all. So what do? I help leaders who are doing, you know, pretty well all round, just kind of get to that next level, that elusive next level. What we do, I guess, more than anything else, is we help leaders sort of future-proof themselves, future-proof their people, and future-proof their business, because I guess that's their job. So, yeah, in between writing and touring and speaking and all of that, I coach leaders, basically. Well, not just me, but the organization. That's what we do, and, we seem to be rather a hit at doing that, I think.
I'm still wrapping my mind around, you know, coaching and the value in that, but it keeps coming up. It keeps coming back more and more. Do all leaders of a certain size have a coach at this point?
The best ones do. without wanting to offend anybody that might be listening who doesn't have a coach, right? But those that take their future development seriously, what everyone know, high percentage, high performance. And the reality is, we have all, every single person on the planet, we have all had a coach. We probably don't realize it, but best coach you ever knew, Peter and John and Mark, was probably your mom, right? And your mom helped you do some tricky things, like learn to walk and talk and read and write and use a fork and not take your eye out. And if you are a parent, you are used to coaching as well, because you've helped your children or the people around you do those kind of things. So coaching is a lot more prevalent than you think. What happens, though, is leaders get to a certain kind of status, size, responsibility, however you want to characterize it, and a lot of them have, you know, they have lots of head trash from stuff that's been going on. You know, they have imposter syndrome. A lot of them, here's the biggest issue with coaching, I guess, Peter. Just before COVID, you know, broke across the States, I caught it in the Super Bowl final, which was in Miami, at the end of February, and then the beginning of March, everybody had COVID. I was an early adopter, right? And nobody knew how to deal with COVID. And, but just before, so we had a pretty torrid time, me, my wife, and my family, because we all caught COVID and nobody knew how to do anything about it. But here's the point. Before COVID, just before the Super Bowl, I did a talk to maybe 400 leaders, all different sizes, all different shapes, you know, from small to big, all verticals and all that kind of stuff. And I asked a question of the audience and I said, okay, so here's a self-awareness question for everybody. Who here, by a show of hands, who here thinks that they have no leadership blind spots? Okay. Now, thankfully, nobody put their hands up because that might have been a more of a difficult conversation. So thankfully, nobody put their hands up. Okay, so off to a good start. Terrific, says I. Okay, now for everybody that didn't put their hands up, in other words, everybody, if you just take a second and just write down what your own particular leadership blind spots are, that'd be terrific. Now, suddenly things get tricky because nobody knows what their blind spots are. Because if they knew what their blind spots were, then there wouldn't be blind spots, right? And the challenge is that as leaders kind of get into more and more and more kind of serious and heavyweight positions, you know, one of the first questions I ask a leader when we start to coach them, Peter, is what percentage of the time do you think your people tell you the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, right? So what percentage of the time do you think your people tell you the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Now, granted, it's not zero, but neither is it 100. Typically, what people do is they tend to tell their leaders a version of the truth that they think it's in their best interest to have the leader believe, right? So even if it's 80%, and the leader's job then is to figure out how do we get to that other 20%. I saw a tremendous interview with George Bush Sr., you know, the ex-president,
yeah.
Who had left the White House. He was no longer the president, and he was in a pro-am golf tournament. And just as he was coming off the 18th green, some reporter shoved a camera in his face and said, "How was the golf, Mr. President?" Bear in mind that he was no longer the president, but you chaps, all ex-presidents, still president. It's confusing. But anyway, so he said, "How was the golf, Mr. President?" And he thought for a second and he said, "It's amazing how many games of golf he's lost since leaving the White House." And that's one of the issues. So you get leaders who got there sometimes by luck or by, you know, by rather than judgment, who have blind spots and they don't know what they are. People aren't telling them the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. You know, nobody ever, I've coached, I don't want to say thousands of leaders, hundreds of leaders maybe. And, you know, in my experience, Pete, nobody's ever gone to the CEO and knocked on the door and said, "Hey, boss, you got a minute?" And of course, they go, "Yeah, sure. Come in. Pete, what's up?" And then Pete says, "Pete, yeah, I just wanted to let you know that I've been watching you, your performance over the last 6 months, and I think it stinks. I think you're terrible at this, and you're dreadful at that, and you don't do this well." And that never happens. If that happened, there probably wouldn't be a requirement for anybody like me. That never happened. It's hard to tell someone that got an ugly baby, right? So one of the things that we deal with is how do we help leaders figure out how do we get them to raise their self-awareness, right? Because self-awareness is at the root of emotional intelligence. Then you can figure out some blind spots and then you can do some stuff about that kind of thing. So to answer your question, should all leaders have a coach? Yes. Why? Because they need to grow their self-awareness, eliminate their blind spots, and figure out how to get to the truth.
Yeah. It all goes back to good old communication, right? You know, I need to communicate with my folks. I need to welcome constructive criticism. I need to welcome constructive criticism. I welcome criticism of all types, whether it's constructive or not. Bring it on. I want to know what I'm doing wrong. And not, like you said, not only know, but whoever's delivering that message, let them know that they are held harmless by delivering that message.
Well, yeah, but you know, not everybody's so enlightened, Peter. And a lot of leaders say that. And I'm not challenging you. I'm not pressure testing you. And I'm not trying to trip you up. But a lot of leaders say that. And they say things like, "My door's always open. I'm, you know, they can talk to me about anything. I'm always here for all of that stuff," right? And it's interesting. And I'll say to them, "Okay, cool. how much time do you spend developing your people? Oh yeah, no, crikey. I mentor and I coach and I do all of that good stuff. And then when we actually dig into it, they don't do any of that stuff. They think they do. They think they're coaching if they say, hey, John, why don't you, do you know what I would maybe do if I were you? I'd think about telling the guy, tell him this, then tell him that. And then you might want to think about telling him that. And then let me know. Let me know what he says. And they think that that's a coaching session. Of course, it isn't. That's just the use of directed authority with a nice pair of slippers on, right? Because John would have to be pretty brave to go, I don't think so, Pete. I'm going to go do my own thing, right? So a lot of leaders think they're coaching and they're not. They think they're leading when they're managing, which is fine because you've got to do some leading and you've got to do some managing. They think they're mentoring when they're not. So a lot of the time as well, certainly in the early days when we engage with a new client, we kind of follow them around a little bit, not like physically, but we'll say, tell us what you did this week, right? And we'll figure out how much time are they being people-oriented and how much time are they being task-oriented? And then how much time are they being proactive and how much time are they being reactive? When you start to plot all of that stuff, you find out that most leaders are pretty reactive and pretty task-oriented. Well, that isn't what coaching is, right? It's about being people-oriented and proactive, and it's about delegating well. And so what's my point? My point is that lots of leaders genuinely believe they are being really, really good leaders, and they're coaching, and they're doing all of the right stuff, when they're not. They're just managing with a nice tonality, and that's not good enough when you're a leader. We coach presidents of companies as well as presidents of countries, and it's the same the world over.
Is that what would be known as imposter syndrome? You mentioned that term earlier.
Well, so imposter syndrome is more that for fear of, it can kind of reveal itself in a few ways. One is, for fear of making the wrong decision, they make no decision, or they make a safe decision. They become very risk averse and so on. And I get it. Oftentimes we're talking about important stuff. Now, at one end, you might be talking about billions in revenue and thousands of people. But even in one of my other companies, when we'll train somebody that's just come out of law school, right? They're brand new out of law school. They know law. They know law really, really well. But they hang their shingle, and they're a one-person enterprise, right? There's the solopreneur, and somebody now says, okay, you got a business, run it. And they don't know how to do that, right? They know the law. They just don't know how to run this business. And so it can go from very small to very big, where people think, well, I can run a $1 billion exercise. Can I run a $58 billion exercise? And there's a big difference between the two. But the principles are just the same, right? But in the same way that the principles are the same to drive a car in an F1 car, right? The principles are the same, but actually the execution of it is slightly different. But so that's one way. Imposter syndrome is also it happened to me years ago, because I'm ancient, but years ago, I was once given a job of running an organization, which you would call like a Fortune 60 company, big company. And really, I shouldn't have got the job. I 100% should not have got the gig, but it was political and it was just, anyway, so I got the gig. And I was pretty terrified, I have to say. But I was working for a tremendous group chairman, and he, I'll tell you what, he gave me an exercise to do, and I'm going to give you three and all of your listeners and viewers and whatever the same exercise. So he called me into his office. I'd been in role like 48 hours, like so I hadn't had time to screw anything up yet, right? So I'd only just kind of just gotten the role, and this is how ancient I genuinely am. There wasn't an email or anything. It was a handwritten note on my desk saying, please come see me, from the chairman. That's how old I am. So anyway, so I went to his office and sat across his big cavernous voluminous desk. And he said, hey, have you ever worked? He said, thanks for coming, Antonio. He said, have you ever worked for a terrible boss, a terrible leader, terrible boss. Have you ever worked for one of those? And I thought, cracky, is this a trick question? So I said, yeah, no, I have. I've worked for some stinkers. And I think it's your leaders, viewers and listeners are listening to this. I'm hoping that they can think back at a time when they've worked for a terrible boss, right? And if they haven't, if they've been lucky enough to never have worked for a terrible boss, you can still play along with this kind of practical kind of thought experiment. So I said, yeah, yes, I have worked for a terrible boss. Terrific, he said, and got a piece of paper and put his pen on top of it and slid it across the desk. And he said, can you just write down, the characteristics of that terrible, terrible boss? So I said, yeah, okay. So I wrote, I can't remember the order of things, but I wrote things like you're thinking about now, which might be micromanager, inconsistent, plays favorites, no strategic plan, blows hot and cold, right? The usual, right? The stuff that you can imagine a terrible leader. And I slid that back to him. He said, yeah, yeah, terrific, terrific. He said, write a few more. So he slid the paper back and I wrote a few more things of, just what does leadership, management, boss dreadfulness look like, right? So we ended, and I did that a couple of times, and he ended up with a list of about 20 things. And he said, he's looking at the list. He said, this is a terrific list. I said, okay, great. Thanks very much. Odd exercise to do, right? And then he said, would you do me an enormous favor? I said, yeah, of course. Yeah. Name it. What would you like? He said, will you promise me that whilst ever you're running this business, you never do any of the things in this piece of paper? So I said, well, okay, I'll try. He said, terrific. Thanks very much. He said, fold it up, put it in your pocket, keep it with you at all times. Whenever I see you in the corridors, in the canteen or wherever, right, the restaurant or whatever, let's talk about it. Let's have a look at it. Let's talk about it. I said, what a bizarre bloke. Anyway, that list, right, that list served me really well over the years, right? And it's an exercise I do with all of my clients as well. I said, what does terrible look like, right? We go through this whole thing, and I said, have you ever done any of these things? And of course, none of us are perfect. So if any of your listeners or viewers are, have a go at that. Just write down what's terrible look like and then kind of measure yourself against it. So one of the other things that we do, Pete, is we say to all of our leaders, look, at the end of the day, kind of write yourself a leadership report card. Just give yourself a grade for the day, somewhere between a C or even an F. C, C plus, B minus, B, B plus, A, right? The thing I'm talking about? Just give yourself a grade for the day. And if it's not A plus, and it's not going to be that every day, right? Because, you're not Usain Bolt of the 100 meters world, right? You're not Michael Jordan of this thing, right? So, and even Michael Jordan, what did Michael Jordan and any other, what's Novak Djokovic doing right this very second? If he's not playing tennis, he's practicing, right? He's training and he's trying to get better and he's with his coach and working on improving all of the time. So let's imagine you get to the end of the day and you go, I'll give myself a B minus today. It's then incumbent upon you to say, okay, well, what would have made that B minus a B plus, right? What could you have done or should you have not done? Or when you said this, what could you have said instead of that? And da, 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 da. What that does though, Pete, John, Mark, I'm not sure which one. I don't want Mark and John to feel left out. I'll talk to Mark for a bit. What that does, Mark, is it starts to raise that self-awareness thing that we were talking about, where you once you 1,000 times looked back and said, I should have said this and I should have said that, and actually keep a record of these things. I could have, if I'd done that, maybe that would have been better. Because hindsight's 20/20 vision, right? So when we look back, how could we have done that better? What starts to happen is you start to build this kind of self-awareness muscle. What then starts to happen is somebody asks you a question. And whilst every fiber of your being wants to bark, can't you see I'm busy? Just tell them no, right? That's what you want to say. But you kind of stop yourself and you go, if I say that, that's a C plus for me for tonight, right? So you'll take a second, you'll measure twice, you'll cut once, and you'll go, okay, great question. What do you think our options are, right? And then you'll start to, develop people. I can't remember what your question was, but did that answer it?
Yeah, I forget what the question was. But yeah, no, to summarize that, listeners, viewers, I love that. Make a list, you know, sit down with your leaders, or if you yourself are the leader, make a list of all the bad things that a bad leader would do, all the negatives. And you could almost take that a step further. What does a good leader look like? Write down for me on page number 2, all of the things that a good leader does, and keep those in your pocket and remember those and use those, carry those with you. And then,
I'm going to pressure test that. Don't do what Pete just told us to do.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Tell us why.
I'll tell you why. Do the first thing, not the second. Don't go, what does a good leader do? Because I also ask leaders when I first coach them, I say, what kind of leader do you want to be? Do you want to be, you know, okay? Do you want to be above average? Do you want to be good? Do you want to be great? Do you want to be best in class? Do you want to be world class? And if they say anything less than world class, I go, we're not for you, right? So when you just went, what does a good leader do? Who gives a shit? What does the best leader do? That's the list you make, okay?
Like that.
Love it. That's why we got the professional on here. Yeah. Antonio, yes.
Okay. So we are taking notes. I'm sorry for swearing. You've probably taught, yeah, if I don't swear three times.
You got to let the swear words out. That's when we really tune in and pay attention. Once you let the swear words fly, we're like, oh, shit, he said something important.
So, Antonio, I got to ask, you obviously have a flurry of knowledge in this space and with the leaders and people that you're working with. Where were you at before you started this? And how did you get to this point where you're able to help these leaders in the way that you are?
That's a great question, John. So here's what happened, okay? So I came out of university a million years ago, right? Used to ride there on my dinosaur. No, so I came out of university. Young 8 years ago, I was an architect. That's how I started my business life. I was an architect and designing kind of buildings all made of glass and curtain walling, very modern, all of that stuff. I was poached to go and work for a competitor. So I got a job. It was a fairly dreadful job. Boss was awful. But anyway, I got poached to go to another job by a really, really creative and developmental. I was so lucky to work for a great boss. I'd worked there for a couple of years and he kept promoting me every 5 minutes. And that's a story for another day. Maybe we've got time later. So he kept promoting me and I kept doing okay. And he came to me one day and he said, look, I don't think you should go. By this time, I was like running the whole of the drawing office. I don't think you should. I think you should go into management. You should. And I went, okay, why? So, well, you know, and I wondered whether it was his codified way of saying you're a pretty crappy architect. That's what I thought it was actually saying. And he went, because like you're really good at the other stuff. And I'm like, is he still kind of kicking me in the pants just with a pair of slippers on? And anyway, he then said, but trouble is, he said, I need you to go back to university. And I went, you're joking. That's 7 years to be an architect, right? And he goes, yeah, but you're built for leadership. You got to go back to, we'll pay, but you got to, and you know, you can keep working here and all of that, but you got to go into an MBA in leadership or that something like that. So I said, okay, so that's what I did. So I did that. Came out and then he said, congratulations, terrific, and put me in charge of Europe. Like, okay, where did that come from? So to answer your question, John, entirely more by luck than judgment, I've just found myself working for bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger organizations and in leadership roles, and was fortunate enough just to have the most tremendous bosses that I'd learned just so much from. Anyway, back to the point. Then about 12 years ago, so we have 4 children and we were about to become empty nesters. They were all about to go off to university. We lived in a big old house in the UK. And I said to my wife, should we go do something else? So I'd also at that time, I'd also done some consulting for the National Health Service, which is the biggest company in the world. And, you know, I'd done some really, really interesting and great things. So I said to my wife, let's go buy a business. Let's go buy a business and let's make money for ourselves rather than somebody else, right? So anyway, we found a pool cue company to buy in Miami. And I thought, that's like the coolest job, right? The coolest business to make pool cues. And I am uniquely dreadful at pool. So I thought, well, I could also learn how to play pool. And it just seemed like a good vibe and it seemed like a good company to buy. Anyway, so we were in the throes of buying this company. We had some other little company. My wife had had her own company for 30 years and we had a couple of other smaller companies, but we thought, let's go and live in Miami. Let's go do that. That sounds like, seems like a pretty groovy place to go. And I'd go to Miami quite a lot. My brother, he was the CFO of a pharmaceutical company called AstraZeneca, which you may have heard of. So he ran South America out of Miami. And every time I went to a board meeting, I would go to Miami and see my brother and my nieces. So I thought, yeah, Miami's groovy, so I'll buy a business in Miami. Anyway, one thing led to another, and I bought a different company. I bought a business development company. And within 10, 12 years, we've grown that to the third largest in the world. We were doing pretty well. I wrote a couple of books for that, wrote this book, which is more about leadership. And I thought, let's just do that whole leadership thing as a separate entity. So we started another business. And so that's kind of just no plan, just kind of wobbled along, John, and just been tremendously fortunate, hired some brilliant people, kept really, really focused, put a really good strategic plan together everywhere I went and just stuck to that. Tried to be the best leader I could be, learned how to coach people like crazy, found myself in Miami more and more coaching bigger and bigger organizations. And I thought, you know, I think this is what I'm actually born for, kind of writing and coaching big businesses. And it all happened kind of by accident, but in a very organized way. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And that's how a lot of us entrepreneurs, I feel like, operate. It's like, no plan B. We're going to put this into action, see how this goes, and then we'll take it.
Yeah. Having no plan B is tremendous. I have lots of people in my time have asked me to mentor them. I'm actually, before we came on air, I said I was going to Utah in a few weeks. A guy that I've been mentoring for a few years, that's where he is. I'm going to go say hello. So people have asked me to mentor them, to kind of help them get along and to do well. So yeah.
So what does your coaching business look like now, and how does like a normal session look like?
So, okay, there's a few ways we do it. So we could coach one-on-one. So like if you called me up, Mark, and said, hey, can you help me be a better leader, for example, right?
Yeah.
We'd have a conversation about that. Myself personally, I don't coach. I have a number of slots in the week that I reserve for coaching my, you know, there are only so many hours in the week. So one-on-one coaching, it's pretty difficult to get me, right?
Yeah.
But I have kind of six or seven slots. If somebody left, you know, got hit by a turnip truck or just, you know, whatever, just left, then there'd be another slot for somebody else. So if you wanted to get me, that there's a bit of a wait. But that's one-on-one leadership coaching. But we do it, you know, we do it. Otherwise, we'll do, I'll assign you to one of our coaches. And we every person has two coaches. They have a personal development coach, and then they have a business development coach, because those people that try and be all things to all people, those coaches that try and be everything to everybody, they end up being nothing to anybody, right? So business development is different from kind of that personal development. And I'm not talking, I don't want to, you know, you might have lots of coaches listening. I'm not talking, you know, these coaches that, you know, I probably do tremendous work in, you know, gratitude or relationships and I don't know, any of that kind of bullshit. So we do personal development stuff. That I'm going to get letters now, aren't I? I'm going to get that. So that personal development stuff, which is all about mindset, right? It's all about beliefs, attitudes, values, the stuff that we were talking about earlier in terms of emotional intelligence and self-awareness. So that's kind of that 6 inches between your head. So we'll give you a specialist for that. And then we'll give you a specialist coach that is that business development, which is very much kind of accountability, all of the behaviors, the skills and abilities. So we've kind of got like a mental piece, kind of conceptual piece that we talk about. And then we've got the technical piece, because running a business, you need to be good mentally as well as, or conceptually as well as technically. So we'll split. So 1 week, Mark, you would have that personal development coach, and then you'd have the business development coach, then the personal, and that we just rotate like that. And then we have group accountability sessions. And then if you were part of a leadership team, we have one of our clients with 50 leaders. We coach 50 leaders just with one client. So, and some of those are in groups and lumps, and we'll do them in, you know, in a bunch at a time. So, you know, it's quite, there isn't one ideal or standard. We're pretty flexible. If we take you on as a client, we'll figure out what the best solution is, I guess.
No.
Yeah. Why? What are you trying to say, Mark? Is Pete not quite as good as I think he is?
No, Pete's awesome. I was just kind of curious on your guys' side of things.
Thank you, Mark. No, but I want to get better, baby. Yeah, you can never. I want to be world class, Antonio. All want to be world class. Mark wants to be world class. JP wants to be world class.
World class is a high bar.
It's awesome. The highest. Yeah. No, you know.
I had another boss, if you don't mind, I'll just quickly hit. And he said to me, he would always ask me these just genius questions. And I often thought, did he sit in his office all day and think, what would be the toughest questions to ask people? But I tell you what, you learn more from a really difficult question than you do from an easy question, right? So When I'm talking to my, you know, the people that we kept, me and the organization, you know, we take a lot of pride in the quality of the questions that we ask, like really work hard on some tip top, you know, that make you really, really mentally sweat. I'll give you a couple of examples if you want. But anyway, this guy, he said to me, it was the same guy, you know, the guy that went, what does dreadful look like?
Uh-huh.
Same guy. So he said to me one day, we were in the canteen. We just happened to have been sat next to each other. And he said, did you earn your money and did you do your best? And I knew him well enough to know that I had to give him a considered answer, right? So did you earn your money? Did you do your best? And I went, yeah, I think so. Yeah, pretty sure I did. He said, oh, what makes you say that? Crap. So I said, well, because I came in early and I did this and that, and we had this meeting and that. We moved the flag along the beach here and we made some progress there and da 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 da. So yeah, so I think I earned my money. He said, good answer. That's the right answer. You should always ask yourself, did I earn my money today? And the answer should always be yes. He said, by the way, if ever you find 3 days on the run that you don't think you've earned your money, he said, come and see me and we'll talk, right? In that kind of very threatening voice that made it very clear that I was never to not earn my money, right? So, and then he said, what about the other question? And I thought they were the same question. Did you earn your money today? Did you do your best? Right. And I went, he said, what about the other question? And I went, oh, the do the best question. So he said, yeah. I went, yeah. Like I said. And he went, oh. He said, because when I ask myself every day, did I earn my money today? The answer, if the answer nearly every day is yes, then good. But the answer to did you do your best today is nearly always no. And I went, okay, explain that then. Tilt, game over, insert more coins, right? What does that mean? So he said, well, what's best? Best is the 100-pound mother lifting up a car to free a trapped child. Best is every day when you go to do the 100 meters, right? If you're an athlete, every single day you get personal best. No, you don't. Nobody does. You're not Superman, right? But so you didn't do your very best. You may have tried to do your best, but you didn't do your very best. You might have earned your money, but you didn't do your best. And that comes back to that, you know, that self-awareness piece that, okay, so I earned my money, tick, but did I do my best? No. That's almost always no. So where was I short? Where was I lacking? And again, comes back to that self-awareness piece. Make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Pete, yeah. You earned your money yesterday.
Yes, I did. Yes.
Did you do your very best?
Not quite. No, I did not.
Good.
That's some great thought-provoking stuff, Antonio. Man, I love that. You know, the Dream Huge podcast is meant to motivate and inspire others, and Antonio Garrido is doing that in a huge way, inspiring leaders all over the world. Thank you so much, man. Appreciate you very much. Is there anything you want to leave the listeners with? Any final thoughts?
So, a couple of things I think I would say. Listen, we're all on a journey. Some people are going to listen to this thing. Oh my God, I'm doomed, right? So we're all on a journey. We're all trying to get better. At least the good ones are. The great ones are. We are constantly trying to improve. So long as you're very, very intentional about the kind of leader you want to be, so long as you're very intentional about your thoughts, behaviors, skills, and attitudes, right? Then you're kind of moving in the right direction. Know that your job as a leader is to help everybody that works for you reach their full potential, including you. Know that your job is to make decisions. Not every decision is going to be terrific, right? Make fewer, better quality decisions. Mm-hmm. Don't just try and answer this, right? Slow down. Make fewer, better quality decisions. If you can get to 8 or 9 out of 10, good. The other two, hopefully those 7 or 8 are going to compensate for the crappy ones, because you don't know what you don't know, right? You can't predict the future. Start to journal every day. What, every day? Yeah, every day, right? Because anybody that says they're serious about their development and they don't journal, don't believe them, and that includes you, right? So start to journal. Go along to our website. There's free templates there, which is all the W's, mydailyleadership.com. There's business health checks there. Get an assessment, right? Because you don't know what you don't know, right? So take an assessment that will objectively tell you where you need some work. And then it doesn't have to be us, but go get some work. You owe it to your people. You owe it to them to be the best that you can possibly be. And if you don't, then you don't deserve the role. You don't.
Excellent stuff. Thank you very much. MyDailyLeadership.com. Antonio Garrido, executive coach, speaker, 3-time author, and author of My Daily Leadership. Where can we find the book? Everywhere books are found?
So everywhere, right? So my first two books were narrated by some dork somewhere. So they were just dreadful. So it's available in paper and audio and electronic and so on. But if you get the audio version, I narrated this one. Sat in a sweaty box for narrated. So bloody listen to it.
I always love when the author narrates their own book. I always feel it's much more powerful, especially when you got a cool accent like you.
Yeah. I don't have an accent, it's all you chaps. But no one else has my jokes, so you have to hear me tell the jokes, that I think.
Awesome stuff. All right, y'all. Hey, thank you, Antonio Garrido. Thank you, JP, John Pavlansky. Thank you, Mark Gray, and myself, Pete Peterson. And thank you for listening and watching the Dream Huge podcast. Remember, as always, like, subscribe, and share. And as always, remember the rules. Work hard, never give up, and dream huge.
Thank you for listening to the Dream Huge podcast. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. For more inspiring content, follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Dream Huge Realty and on TikTok at Dream Huge Inc. Until next time.